This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Halfway through the program, Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Stephen Wino of the Associated Press is going to join us momentarily as soon as we can figure out these complicated devices known as telephones. You know, we're working with one hand tied behind our back a little bit sometimes.
What are you boys binge-watching these days? Because I can tell you one thing, I have watched a lot of true crime lately.
I started Chernobyl. It was from a few months ago already, but I'm catching up on it.
Are you an Ozark guy?
I haven't watched it. I've heard good things.
He's been to the Ozarks.
Yeah. No, I haven't been to the Ozarks, Dave. That is not where Kentucky is, but good try. We got Steven already. Let's go to the Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Stephen Wino of the Associated Press joins us on the line. Stephen, how are you?
Hanging in there. How are you guys doing?
I'm good. How's self-isolation doing for you in the D.C. area?
Yeah, probably the same as all you guys. It's just it's a lot of hanging in, trying to catch up on TV shows and movies, and self-stocked with a lot of beer and wine.
Those are the essentials. You know, who needs real food? Beer and wine can certainly add those calories as needed. Are you anything like me? Like, my dog is pretty sick of us being home. I don't know if it's the same with you and your dog.
No, I think everyone's happy at this point. I think everyone's happy to just to be around, not have any workplaces to go to.
I don't know, your dog must be nicer than my dog. My dog looks at us like, you're still here? Why are you still here? It's time for you to go to work. Anyway, Stephen, obviously we didn't bring you on to talk about dogs. You know, all these playoff scenarios that are being bandied about, and you know, there's going to be play-in games, or they're going to start in July and they're going to play until next November, and the playoff games in October will count for the regular season next year, whatever it might be. Are people maybe fooling themselves a little bit at this point in time to think that they'll be able to just flip a switch and get back into hockey?
I don't think fooling. What the NHL is doing on a daily, if not hourly basis, is literally figuring out what are the options. In case, here's a worst-case scenario. Here's a best-case scenario. Here's kind of a middle of the road. And it's essentially, like, taking ideas, like you take phone calls from fans, from owners and GMs and even the PA and those people about suggestions. And I think what's the most reasonable at this point is something in the neighborhood of a mid to late June resumption of training camps or playing games in a potential playoffs July, August, into September. I know the league very much wants to get all of next season in. That's going to be a priority for them, even if it means starting November 1st, November 15th. Having a very kind of contained schedule, no bye weeks, no All-Star weekend, that sort of thing. But the problem right now is everything is changing on such a minute-by-minute, hour-by-hour basis that no one exactly knows what's going to happen.
Stephen, a couple of days ago, as you know, we found out that a member of the Ottawa Senators tested positive for COVID-19, the coronavirus. We don't know who that player is yet, of course, and we might not find out. I don't know if it really matters at this point. The only thing that matters is if that player is healthy. That's what we're all thinking about right now. But do you think this changes anything at the macro level in terms of when we might return or how the NHL is going to proceed with this? Or does it really ultimately come down to what the national health agencies say about, you know, whether or not these professional leagues can restart their seasons?
Yeah, I think it's more of a national health, kind of international health decision, because even Gary Bettman has said it's not going to be the NHL's call. If the CDC and Health Canada and these places are still not recommending gatherings of 50 or more people, I mean, that's, you have more people just involved in the game. Forget about even empty stands and that sort of thing. You've got 20 players dressed on each team, plus coaching staff and training staff, already that goes over that number. I think when Rudy Gobert and the NBA tested positive, that was a game changer, that all of a sudden you had an athlete testing positive and you got all these guys sharing locker rooms and these teams sharing arenas, and that's a big deal. But I do think more so than individual players testing positive, I think the greater public and just the percentage of people in U.S., Canada, and around the world contracting the coronavirus is going to have an impact on what percentage of players and coaches and staff members in the league have it. So you can extrapolate it rather than say, okay, we only have X number of positive tests, because players aren't being tested right now unless they're showing symptoms, unless they're with the Ottawa Senators. So I don't even know that we can glean anything from one or however many positive tests there are out there.
Stephen, part of the beauty of sports is that it's distraction from life, and obviously now they've the two things have blended in. But there's still some positives, and you know the Seattle franchise continues to work towards you know revealing its name. How important is that, especially in a community like Seattle that's been hit as it has been by coronavirus, to have that sort of positivity still you know kind of present?
What it is, I think it's a difficult juggling act for the Seattle folks right now because yes, it's positive. Really great news for the NHL and Seattle as they push back the start of this franchise to 2021 and not 2020 for when this is starting. But I think it's a delicate balancing act just because you have so many people in the Seattle area and in the state of Washington who have contracted this, who are worried about this, that it's not like you can go out there and announce the name now and try to have a bunch of fanfare because it's still at such a sensitive point in time right now. I mean, across the world, especially in a place like Seattle, that they're working internally in Seattle. Everyone in that organization is working from home, working remotely, working from home now, and still doing the work to build up to that. They pushed the kind of deadlines for season ticket deposits back for people there and doing some good things for the community. It's just it's tough when you have something that's positive that's coming in such a negative time because you people something to look forward to, but I think just the ending of self-quarantining and the resuming of normal life is what people are looking forward to first before even thinking about hockey.
Stephen Wino is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Stephen is with the Associated Press. He covers the NHL. He also covers horse racing, of course. And Stephen, if I can take a bit of a detour, horse racing is sort of continuing similar, you know, not quite status quo as the Kentucky Derby has been moved to September, but there's a lot of big horse races that are still continuing despite this COVID-19 outbreak. Are you surprised that horse racing hasn't really taken a significant pause?
Well, it's going to happen soon. And we had a trainer tell us the other day that he thinks horse racing is on borrowed time at this point because the Kentucky Derby made the right move. You can't have a big event like that with tens of thousands of people in May. That's not a reasonable timeline. What I thought made horse racing kind of protected against this was so many people watch on TV. They can gamble on their phones or gamble online, but you don't need people at the track. They can go about kind of holding these races in empty buildings, and it doesn't change that much of kind of the economics of the sport. But now you've got a worker in New York testing positive. You got a handful of jockeys saying, we're not going to ride this race or we're not going to ride at all. And I think it's coming soon. I think that moment of reckoning that came to the NBA and the NHL, Major League Baseball, these tennis events, golf, NASCAR eventually, I think it's coming to horse racing. I think we're seeing the Louisiana Derby today, a big race that usually it's a Kentucky Derby prep race going on. The Dubai World Cup in the United Arab Emirates is happening at the end of this month with no fans, but I think after that it's going to be tough to see horse racing continuing at least at this moderate pace for a little while, because as soon as you start having positive tests at these racetracks, it's just like these other professional leagues. The other people involved in running the sport aren't going to want to be responsible for larger outbreaks.
Yeah, just as a side to that, you know, is horse racing a passion of yours, or did you just sort of fall backwards into covering it as well for the Associated Press? I know Dave is a big fan of the horses. My wife is actually from Kentucky, so I'm a fan of the horses as well. But is it a passion of yours, or did you just sort of adopt that as a beat as well?
It is a passion of mine. My grandfather worked as a teller at Philadelphia Park Racetrack for 20 years. So my dad would always take my brother and I to the track on the weekends. And so not that I've even been involved in horse racing really, until kind of working it, but just being around racetracks growing up and really some of the dirtiest racetracks at that time in the early to mid-90s, it made me love the sport and being around it, just talking to trainers, talking to owners, learning the stories of these people. It's just made me love, I mean, look, guys, I love hockey. We all love hockey. If I could do horse racing full time, I would. I love the sport so much. And love the people and the stories that come with it.
Stephen, I think we might have to use this time to watch Seabiscuit again.
Seabiscuit and Secretariat movies. It'd be a good time to watch both of them.
You know, Stephen, just to get back to hockey, just a few more questions for you here. You know, a lot of talk these days. We talked about it earlier. You know, will we see a return of the regular season? You know, if hockey does return, you know, in the next 2 or 3 months, are we just going to go straight into the playoffs and all of that? But do you think people have to start getting it out of their mind that, you know, the NHL regular season, you know, it doesn't really matter as much as maybe some people think? I know there's some people that, you know, have been talking about, you know, the ramifications. You know, Alex Ovechkin was at 48 goals and how that could affect his, you know, chase for 894 goals and the goal scoring record, and, you know, David Pasternak's magical season where, you know, he had a really good shot at, you know, getting to 55 or more goals. Do people have to stop thinking about that and just realize if we do get a return of hockey, that's just a bonus, and what really does matter here is this national pandemic and you know, kind of, you know, making sure that that curve stays obviously on the low side.
Yeah, and it's just the way people have changed their thinking about their everyday lives. I mean, you change your thinking about what you're going out to eat for dinner, or you're going to go to the grocery store and make dinner at home, or get takeout from your local restaurant that's closed. I think there is that kind of shift in thinking that's going to happen, that I know inside the NHL they are talking about trying to do something with the rest of the regular season, whether that's playing games for a handful of teams, whether that's trying to get everybody to a certain amount of games. But when you can't talk about records and is this unfair or fair when you're in an unprecedented time that we haven't seen this in 100 years. We haven't seen this in a century, and certainly before major sports became this monetized and this big of a deal, that the priority, I think, for the NHL now is going to be having an integral way, some integrity in handing out the Stanley Cup, that not having a winner this year would be something that the league is striving desperately to avoid, even if it happens to be in an empty arena somewhere in September, if that's what it comes to. But, yeah, it's hard to take David Pasternak can get to this, or Alex Ovechkin can get to that, seriously, when you have so much in life that's changing. And if these guys aren't even on the ice, to where how much time would it take to ramp up all these teams in training camps to be able to play an extra 10 to 12, 13 games each the rest of the way, 189 more regular season games to go. It's hard for me to imagine at this point all 189 games are played before the playoffs begin.
You know, Stephen, there isn't a ton of NHL or hockey news, I should say, but we are seeing some NCAA players signing, a lot of the undrafted players. A few of the signed guys, the drafted players, are signing as well. Do you think that that's going to continue to happen? Do you think some of the signing players, obviously folks here in Winnipeg are looking at Dylan Sandberg, hoping he signs with the Jets, but do you see that happening soon, or do you think that's going to be more of a wait-and-see approach?
I think it's going to happen a lot now, because there are hockey people, whether it's general managers, scouts, agents, player personnel people, they've got nothing else to do right now. This is the only game in town. I got a chance to speak to Brad for a Living of the Calgary Flames yesterday. And he said, yeah, they're still working on other potential deals of signing their own picks, looking at college free agents. That's the only business being done in the league right now. You're looking at even some guys who are on American League contracts. Montreal Canadiens did that with a guy in Laval yesterday, that this is a time that because there's no live scouting that can be done, what teams are doing is they're prepping, watching videotape and stuff for the draft, and they're also looking at making these signings. So I think you're going to see a lot of these over the coming days and weeks, because there's no other hockey to be played or even scouted at this point.
Stephen Wino covers the NHL for the Associated Press. His passion is horse racing, though, as well. Stephen, appreciate your time and insight. Be well there, and we'll talk to you again real soon, and hopefully we can get some hockey back up and running.
Thanks, guys. Be well.
Take care, Stephen. When we come back, the Chicago Blackhawks announced that their entire management team is going to return. Are we surprised by that decision? We talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I want to express my appreciation to Rocky, John, and Stan for the opportunity. First of all, to bring me from Sweden to the organization. It's an honor to join the Blackhawks, the original six franchise, fantastic city, tradition of success, and we're going to do everything we can to build on that.
Chicago Blackhawks head coach Jeremy Colliton, from when he was being introduced, that was a couple years ago now, after they fired Joel Quenneville, if you remember that controversial decision. Well, the Blackhawks announced earlier this week that Colliton, Stan Bowman, President John McDonough, they're all going to be back. as members of the Blackhawks organization, even though they're going to miss the playoffs. Well, they've missed the playoffs.
You know how I know I'm getting pretty old? It doesn't seem like that long ago that Jeremy Colliton was playing for Canada at the World Juniors. It really doesn't.
Isn't he still the youngest head coach in the NHL? I mean,
he's 35.
Yeah, so he's definitely
gotta be one of the youngest. For sure.
I mean, when he was hired, he was. Yeah, I don't think anybody
younger. Sheldon Keefe? I think Sheldon Keefe is 38, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, so they're neck and neck. Are you surprised by this decision of the Blackhawks to bring them both back? I mean, this is another year where the Blackhawks have missed the playoffs.
Sheldon Keefe is 39.
Okay.
Technically, they haven't missed anything right now, Drew.
Okay.
Season's paused, Drew.
I'm fast-forwarding and saying that the Blackhawks are going to miss the playoffs.
They're actually getting a play-in game to see if they get regulated to the AHL.
Is that how it works? So, are you surprised that they're not making any moves to the front office and they're not making any moves to the coaching staff?
No, I'm not. And let's start with Stan Bowman, right, guys? I mean, the name Bowman itself speaks for itself.
Well,
right?
I think the name Bowman is the only reason he keeps his job.
Well, I mean, that might be true. I mean, Scotty Bowman's still an advisor there, right?
That's why I think it's the only reason he keeps his job.
Well, you look at some of the moves that they made, and the Blackhawks, to me, have been one of the more, I don't know if underrated stories is a good word, but I mean, the Blackhawks have been there all year long. Like, it's not like, you know, you look at some of those teams in California, right? Like the LA Kings, the Anaheim Ducks, like they were making some moves towards the end of the season, but they were nowhere near a playoff spot. Chicago has been, you know, within, let's say, 5 points of a playoff spot for the majority of the season. And, you know, you talk about those injuries, right? Calvin DeHaan, Brent Seabrook. I mean, obviously Seabrook is a guy that, you know, he's a third pairing defenseman at this point, right? But I mean, you look at the moves that Stan Bowman made. I think, you know, some of those moves were pretty good. And, you know, Alex Nylander obviously hasn't had the success that you would like, but Henry Jokiharju was a guy that they could afford to trade because you've got a plethora of D prospects. Now, Adam Boqvist is a guy.
Doesn't mean you have to. It still was a bad trade in that the return hasn't paid out.
Well, I mean, you're only talking about one season, but Alex Nylander is a very young player. But I agree. I think Jason Botterill and the Buffalo Sabres won that trade. But the point is you brought in Calvin DeHaan. You brought in Olli Maatta. And Olli Maatta, to me, I think has been pretty disappointing. But Calvin DeHaan's a really good defenseman, Drew. But the point is I think some of the moves that Stan Bowman made in the Robin Lehner. I mean, he acquired Robin Lehner.
And then he traded him for pennies on the dollar because they couldn't get the Stan Bowman. The Blackhawks should have re-signed Robin Lehner.
I agree, but it was a good signing up until they traded him away.
It was a good signing for the
year. Pardon me.
It was a good signing. And then,
sorry,
and
I
then
forgot if it was a signing or a trade. It was a signing.
He signed him for one year.
$5 million. I agree. They should have re-signed him. Yes. I don't understand that.
You get partial credit for doing a part of the job well.
Right.
And then you fail miserably on the second part of the
year. They should have got more. Terms, though, Drew.
Well, why can't you come to terms with him? I mean, this is a guy. I mean, I'm reading Mark Lazarus in The Athletic. There was the inability to even get negotiations off the ground with Robin Lehner and subsequently losing him for a pittance at the trade deadline.
Like, unless that's Robin Lehner, sorry, Drew, to cut you off, but at least Lehner was asking for $10 million a year. Like, we've talked about this.
They couldn't even get the negotiations to that point, though.
Right, but that's about it prior to the trade deadline. Like, is Lehner not a $7 to $8 million a year goalie?
He's proven himself over the last couple of seasons to be a top five NHL goaltender.
So that's $7 to $8 million.
And instead, you're going to... Who's the Blackhawks goaltender for next year?
Corey Crawford.
Well, Corey Crawford is not at the point where he can be a regular goaltender in the NHL anymore.
Well, they're probably going to re-sign him.
And Corey Crawford's a UFA next.
They're probably going to give him a one-year or two-year deal.
Is that help your team at all? Does that change your outlook for next season if you're the Blackhawks?
No. And that's why I agree with you, Drew, that I think they should have re-signed Lehner. But I feel like what were the expectations this year aside from making the playoffs and maybe winning a round? Like, I don't think the ownership, I don't think the Wirtz family thought that the Blackhawks were going to go on a deep playoff run this year.
You look at Stan Bowman's moves. And you know, I have no problem with him keeping Colliton. Colliton is fine behind the bench.
I think he's a good young coach.
I agree.
I really do.
I don't have a problem with Colliton. Stan Bowman, to me, is a guy who, like I said at the outset of the segment, is living off of his last name. His moves, for the most part, with the Blackhawks, his significant moves have been failures. Artemi Panarin. They had Artemi Panarin, and they traded him for Brandon Saad.
Well, you're going back to 2017 now.
It's still his trade.
Well, you traded Nicholas Hjalmarsson.
Yeah.
who is was your arguably your second best defenseman.
No question.
Right? After Duncan Keith.
After Duncan Keith.
Right? And that was back then. I mean, Duncan Keith is not the same defenseman he was 3 years ago. But
you traded away players that you didn't need to trade. And the return for your players was not sufficient. And that's why they haven't been a playoff team for the last number of years.
And you look at, you know, under Jeremy Colliton, how a player like Kirby Dach has done, Alex DeBrincat, Dylan Strome, like, there's reason to be optimistic there. Do I think they're going to be a Stanley Cup contender in that Central Division next year? Probably not. But I think there's enough there to work with. Like, you're talking about, you've still got Johnny Toews, you've still got Patrick Kane. You know, I mentioned DeBrincat, Strome, Kirby Dach, Adam Boqvist is a good young defenseman. I mean, there are enough pieces here to build around, I think.
They've drafted well, and they've done a good job, as Mark Lazarus outlines in his column, and they've done a good job, you know, going overseas and finding some you know, untapped gems.
The trade for Dylan Strome was a good one.
That was a good trade.
That's not attributable to the GM. That's drafting and your pro scouting.
I agree. Where Bowman has the most influence, which in my mind would be trades.
And contracts,
yep. He's failed. He gets an F in my books.
Well, you know, Drew's going to fire him.
I just think... He doesn't get a great grade. If you want to give him a D, then go ahead. But what contract on their books would you say is a good signing by the general manager?
Well, before the trade deadline, Leonard.
Well, fine. And then you couldn't fulfill it. If you re-sign Leonard at 3 years or 4 years at similar dollars, then that's a great contract. I have no problem with that. But instead, you still have this continued uncertainty in goal. You have a goalie in Corey Crawford whose best days are behind him, and he's injury prone. You have nobody to step in as a replacement.
Who, by the way, is from one of my favorite towns in California?
Malcolm Subban's a pending RFA. So.
Malcolm Subban was terrible this year in Vegas.
Well, I'm just saying, I'm not saying he's going to be the number one goalie. I'm just saying he could be a backup.
Colin Delia from? Rancho Cucamonga in California.
There you go.
I've been trying all segments.
You're Cucamonga. Cucamonga, Dave.
Exactly. When we come back, Jennifer Botterill is going to join us. We'll talk to Jen about everything that's going on in the hockey world and the impact of the shutdown on the women's hockey game as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're thrilled to welcome back to the program Jen Botterill. You know Jen, of course, from her time with Team Canada, one of the greatest women's hockey players of all time. She's now a broadcaster as well. Jen, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Pleasure. It's nice to connect again.
Yes, our pleasure to have you, Jen. And obviously, we brought you on, and we'll look around the world of hockey as much as there is still a world of hockey. But I want to start with the broadcast that you were a part of back on International Women's Day. It was still a simpler time back then before COVID-19 took away all the news and made all the news. You know, what was it like from your perspective to be a part of that NBC Sports broadcast that featured all women?
Yes, I mean, it was an honor, and we had a great team assembled for the all-female coverage of the Blues and the Blackhawks game. And I think one of the main messages that we were sharing was that these are all roles that we're involved with on a regular basis, just, you know, with different networks on different teams. So it was nice to have the chance to do so. You know, on the NBC platform to celebrate International Women's Day and hopefully inspire people to understand there should be choices, you know, and I often do describe, you know, the situation with women's hockey and hopefully it's the same for women in business and in broadcasting to say, you know, every position should be a choice and an option for you. So we were all thrilled to be a part of it. And it was a lot of fun to cover.
How has the transition for you been from, you know, you spent so many years as a hockey player, and, you know, how has that transition been from playing the game to sort of talking about the game and being an analyst of the game?
Yes, well, thanks for asking. I mean, I absolutely loved my experience as an elite athlete. Playing the game, representing our country was a huge privilege. And it's been really nice for me now to transition to a role where I'm still involved and still connected to the sport, but in a very different capacity. And for me, that's been a lot of fun, very rewarding, and it's something that I've enjoyed. So loved my life as an athlete, but I also feel very fortunate now to still be involved in the sport and the game in this different role.
You know, Jen, just kind of building off of what you mentioned, you know, playing for Team Canada at the Olympics and the Women's World Championship, obviously, you know, it's horrible that the 2020 Women's World Championships were canceled in Halifax, Truro, and it's just, you know, another element of hockey that we're going mm-hmm. to miss, right? But when you talk mm-hmm. about, you know, all of these great accomplishments for women's hockey this year, you know, I think back to the 2020 NHL All-Star Game and the Elite Women's 3-on-3 game, and we just talked about, you know, the all-female broadcast on NBC. Even though, you know, there's a lot of negatives this year, you know, specifically, mm-hmm. you know, the cancellation of the Women's World Hockey Championship, but in your opinion, is this not a good time to just focus on all of the good when it comes to women's hockey and looking forward? Because as you know, the uncertainty involving, you know, the women's professional hockey game, you know, is just mm-hmm. as big as it was at the beginning of the year.
Absolutely. And I continue to have conversations about the state of the game and the direction that it's going. And I remain hopeful that there is a future and a strong potential for a very sustainable women's professional hockey league. And as I reflect on my career, I was even doing so more so with the World Championships. As you mentioned, unfortunately, the Women's Worlds were canceled for this year. But I had a lot of conversations because I competed at the World Championships in Halifax, Nova Scotia in 2004. And it was one of my career highlights. You know, when you think about playing in a World Championships or an Olympics in Canada, it's a very special experience for an athlete. So yes, there is a lot of uncertainty in so many aspects of today's world, but I do think there have been strides taken recently in women's hockey that hopefully continue to encourage people that there is a bright future and hopefully a lot of great choices for elite athletes in the game as they move ahead. You know, when you're done college, to feel like you have a great and an exciting place to play, whether you want to make the national team or you just want to continue your career after university or college hockey. So I remain hopeful that it's going to get there. I don't know if anyone knows exactly what that path is going to look like clearly, but as you mentioned, those involvements with the NHL All-Star Game have been great for exposure and awareness. And I think that only helps everyone to understand the quality of the product of women's hockey.
You know, Jen, you talk about roles and things that young girls can look up to and aspire to be. One thing we haven't seen yet is a woman behind the bench of an NHL team. We've seen in the NFL, we've seen it in the NBA. Dawn Braid, who works for the Coyotes, she was the first full-time female coach in the NHL. She was a skating coach for the Coyotes. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen someone behind the bench. Do you see that happening in the next few years?
You know, I think it's certainly possible. I believe it should be an option. And Haley Wickenheiser is an example, a teammate that I had for the 4 Olympics that I competed in, and she's now working on player development with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And so she's on the ice with them, with the Marlies, their AHL team. So she is an example. And you're seeing more females in various roles within professional sports organizations. And hockey is reflecting that as well. As you mentioned, you don't see everyone in every single position yet or behind the bench yet, but I believe it's only a matter of time.
Jen Botterill is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know Jen from her distinguished hockey career, of course, with Team Canada and, of course, at Harvard University. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. And Jen, in addition to your work as a studio analyst, you're doing some motivational speaking as well. When you get the opportunity to address, say, you know, a group of young women who are, you know, trying to maybe, you know, continue an athletic career, what's the main message that you deliver to them?
There are a few that I try to convey, but if I had to pick a top few that I would share in terms of encouragement, one would be the importance of having the confidence and how important it is to believe in yourself. I think that's one of the first steps. You know, I often share a story about a conversation with my parents that I had when I was 15, you know, about making the Olympic team, about wanting to play for Team Canada. And they said that day, they said, why not you, right? If somebody else could be there, why can't it be you? And so I think for many kids, you know, whether it's in sport or music or art or dance or whatever the activity is, to encourage kids to have that self-confidence and the belief for them to strive towards those goals. You know, a couple other fronts would be that it takes a lot of dedication, a lot of hard work, and you might need to make some different choices than your friends, but that's part of it. And so you do need to dedicate yourself. And the third thing would probably be just to enjoy it. I really believe it's important to have fun along the way. And I often describe that experience, whether we were competing at the World Championships in Winnipeg or playing in the Olympics in Canada and Vancouver. Those were very intense, very competitive moments. But I still feel like we had a little smile on our face when we were playing and competing, right? To say this is exactly where we want to be. And I really believe that's important for young athletes of any age with high aspirations to continue to enjoy the path along the way. And I certainly feel very fortunate from, you know, playing sports in Winnipeg to playing at Harvard to playing with Team Canada, that for me, I tried to make the most of it and still enjoy and to appreciate the path along the way as well.
Jen, just switching gears, we mentioned earlier you're doing analysis for the New York Islanders. The Islanders, of course, were just, I believe, 1 point out of a playoff spot. They lost a couple of games before the NHL put the season on hold. But how would you sum up this season? Because the Islanders had a couple of games in hand on the Columbus Blue Jackets, and many observers were looking at the Islanders and saying, well, this is a perfect team, you know, to take advantage of all those injuries the Blue Jackets were having. But I think you'd agree that this year was much different than last year when the Islanders caught a lot of teams by surprise.
They did, and it was a different season for them. They were a little more streaky. The last season, they were a little more consistent with their performance, and they had sort of struggled before the season was postponed. And the one thing I can say, it has been a pleasure to cover the team. They've been a very professional organization. Barry Trotz, you know, a Manitoba guy, has been, you know, a pleasure to deal with. He always provides a lot of insight for the team, and they certainly respect his leadership and his perspective. The team, you know, was faced with a lot of injuries, but Lou Lamoriello, the general manager, would be the first one to say that that's not an excuse, right? Many teams in the league were facing injuries, but they do have a very strong character within their group. So they still believed, even though they had a tough phase and had lost a lot of games before the postponement happened, they still believed that they could be a strong playoff contender. And Barry Trotz is one to say that, you know, as the head coach, he would mention that if he continued to do the right things, he believed the results would come. But it is a team, they rely very heavily last season on their fourth line. And their fourth line was Clutterbuck and Martin and Cizikas. And they were a line that brought so much energy and heart to the team and character that the other lines really did seem to feed off of that. And they've had a tough time of keeping that line together throughout the season. I think that was something that affected the energy and the performance of the team a little bit.
You know, Jen, the only hockey we seem to be talking about right now is NCAA, because there's obviously players whose seasons are done now early and are signing with NHL teams. You know, you spent 4 years at Harvard University with the Crimson. What would it be like from, if you cast your eyes back and remember those years, would it be like to have your season abruptly finish? And, you know, especially for the seniors whose college careers are now done.
I know. It's really tough. It's, you know, and there are so many aspects of everything that's happening that are very emotional. And as you mentioned, that's a great example, that as a player who played 4 years at university, and my brother competed and played hockey at Michigan University as well before I went to Harvard. And we both loved our experience in playing hockey. And every season is so special. It does seem like a time flies by so quickly. So I do sympathize with those athletes that it's tough, because you look forward to that to every moment in your career, especially with just your senior year and your last year and your last opportunity to represent your team. But I think also that many athletes have a healthy perspective, and they understand there are far more important priorities right now for everybody to focus on. So that being said, there's disappointment, and you feel their emotions, but I think many elite athletes also understand the reality of the situation.
Jen Botterill is an analyst on New York Islanders broadcast. She's, of course, a famed Olympian and hockey player. Jen, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Appreciate your time and insight.
Oh, always a pleasure to chat with you. Thanks for the time.
Take care, Jen. Thanks very much.
Okay. Thanks.
Quick update related to COVID-19. Manitoba has a presumptive positive case. The first time in a few days now, we're up to 18 presumptive positive cases. Now, it does appear to be linked to travel. So that means not community spread. So there's your latest COVID-19 update. Cases are up 1 to 18. When we come back, I got to tell you, I didn't think we'd be talking about a feud between Scott Stevens and Ty Domi, but here we are. We'll share the audio and we'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Niedermeyer trying to get out of his own skate. Remains down on the ice as all the other players come together.
It would probably be about a 30-game suspension today, but back in the good or bad old days, depending on your perspective, it was one of the seminal hits in the NHL. Scott Stevens laying out Eric Lindros in the playoffs. We all remember it. We can all envision it. You know, obviously, what we now know more so about concussions and CTE changes your perspective on it. But it certainly was, at the time, a significant body check by Scott Stevens on Eric Lindros. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuke, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. Let me just take a straw poll before we play the next audio clip. Is there anybody in this room who doesn't think that Scott Stevens was tough?
Well, okay, if you're going to look right at me here, Drew, you guys know Scott Stevens is my all-time favorite player. I mean, that's the reason I'm a Devils fan. Scotty Stevens, Scotty Niedermeyer. Hey, throw in Scotty Gomez as well. Ken Danico, who we've had on the show many times. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer. Of course he's tough.
Dave?
Scott Stevens is very tough, yeah.
Okay, here's what Ty Domi. Again, I'm not. It's amazing that in 2020 we're talking about this.
I'm like, what year is this?
Yeah, I know.
What decade is this?
This is
2004.
This is from earlier this week. Here's what Ty Domi had to say about Scott Stevens.
Are you kidding? I mean, Scott Stevens was the biggest phony I ever played against. Honestly, I chased that guy for years. He was such a phony; it was a joke. Okay, let me put that out there. Scott Stevens was the biggest phony out there. Okay,
wow.
That guy used to target all the tough guys, all the best players of my teams, and I always tried to, you know, fight him, and he would never fight. He never stuck up for anything that, you know, was kind of, you know, what a hockey player stands for, and he never, ever answered the bell, ever, ever, ever. Went a bench clearing brawl with Devils one time, and he bear hugged me so hard, it was unbelievable. We were on the bench. We had a bench clearing brawl with the Rangers and Devils, and him and I ended up on the bench. He was bear-hugging so hard, I said, let go. I'm going to beat the shit out of you. He wouldn't let go. He was holding on so tight. But he made that big, you know, scene. He was in a penalty box when I elbowed Niedermeyer.
Yeah.
You know, and I was, okay, great. And, you know, he's going to finally fight me. Played against him again the following year. He wouldn't even look at me. So, you know, I don't know those people who think that he was a good hitter, obviously. But, mm-hmm. you know, he targeted the wrong guys at very vulnerable times, and he never answered the bell. So, you know, Scott Stevens is a tough guy. Come on, give me a break.
That is courtesy of the Cam and Strick podcast. Cam Jansen and our buddy Andy Strickland apparently have a podcast, and they had Ty Domi on, and biggest phony out there.
Hold on, I will say this. Domi specifically, he's not talking about that he's not a tough guy in terms of hitting. He's saying, because if you watch, honestly, like you type in Scott Stevens, Ty Domi, Scott Stevens leveled Domi in like 99, 2000 when the Leafs were playing the Devils in round 2 in game 6. And it's like Stevens torched him. And then in 93, when Domi was with the Jets and they were playing the Devils, I think
Domi goes after Stevens and Mike Peluso jumps in.
Right, but Stevens hits Domi.
Yes.
Really well, by the way. I mean, that's the one thing about Scott Stevens. He was a good hitter. And if you're at the blue line,
he's the best hitter of all.
You were likely going to get crunched. Domi got crunched, got mad, tried to fight Stevens. So Stevens wouldn't, Domi isn't wrong. Stevens wouldn't fight him because Peluso jumped in. Not Stevens. Stevens never went after Domi. So, I mean, I know what Domi's saying. He's not saying, he's just saying he's not a fighter. Right. And I don't think that's a wrong statement.
And Scott Stevens not fighting Ty Domi doesn't mean that he was a phony. Like, I got to say something here because I like Ty Domi. I have nothing against Ty Domi. Obviously, he played for the Winnipeg Jets, had a great career. He was tough. And not only was he tough, he could score as well. People forget that, especially earlier in his career. He could put the puck in the net every once in a while. But he's completely off base here. I actually had to go back, and I want to give a shout out to our buddies at hockeyfights.com.
Yeah.
Because it's a great site here. I knew that Scott Stevens got into some fights, but I wanted to go back and count how many fights he got into. Like, and you know, you might be like, oh, maybe he got into like 5 fights, 10 fights, something like that. Over the course of Scott Stevens' career in the preseason and regular season, I'm talking NHL here, He was in over 100 fights. So if anybody thinks that Scott Stevens didn't drop his gloves, and by the way, being tough isn't just dropping the gloves. Like, that doesn't define you being tough. But obviously, as far as Ty Domi is concerned, that's what it is here. So, again, I repeat, he was in over 100 career fights. And you might say, oh, yeah, but he didn't fight any tough guys here. Okay? And this is later in his career. Mm-hmm. Donald Brashear, he was pretty tough. Mm-hmm. And granted, Donald Brashear won that fight. You're talking about Rick Tocchet. Rick Tocchet was pretty damn tough, too.
Not a fighter, though.
Luke Richardson.
Tough.
Sandy McCarthy, who was a giant, a behemoth, not a giant like Zdeno Chara, but Sandy McCarthy was 6'3", 6'4", 200 plus pounds. You're talking about really tough, PJ Stock. I mean, PJ Stock was a smaller player, but PJ Stock was also a guy that dropped his gloves. But when you're talking about, you know, Sandy McCarthy and Donald Brashear, I mean, these were heavyweights. So as far as I'm concerned, if that's how you define toughness, I mean, Scott Stevens did drop the gloves, and earlier in his career, because you remember, he didn't start his career with the Devils, but earlier in his career
with the Blues,
with Washington.
Washington, then the Blues.
He started his career. He had 6 to 10 fights a year. This notion that he's a phony, I mean, yeah, granted, you know, later in his career, in the early, mid-90s, maybe Scott Stevens didn't want to fight Ty Domi, but I don't think that makes him a phony. That's ridiculous.
We should just give our audience who can't see Ezzy right now a full disclaimer. He's wearing a Devil's onesie with a Stevens on the back.
Okay, I went back. Hold on. He had 14 fights in his first year with Washington.
Yeah.
He had 14 fights the next year. I mean, you go up and down, 86, 87. He's in his sixth year in the league, 13 fights. Like, Scott Stevens used to fight a lot. Like, the fact that, like, what's...
You're choking on your rage right now.
No, but what's the definition of phony? So he didn't want to fight Ty Domi a couple times, so he's a phony? Like, that's stupid. Sorry, Ty. Like to come out and call a Hall of Famer phony. First off, he won multiple Stanley Cups. He's the best hitter of all time. He was a damn good offensive player. People forget that. Yeah, sure, in the early 2000s, late 90s, you know, Scott Stevens wasn't putting up big numbers. But
It was the dead puck era.
Go back and look at his numbers with the Blues and the Capitals. I mean, at 60, 70 points a year.
I think, as the kids say, that you know, Scott Stevens is living rent-free in Ty Domi's head. Because it's 2020, and we're talking about this because Ty is obviously still not over whatever it is that, you know, the beef between the two of them.
Maybe they could have a fight.
Like a fist fight now?
Yeah, like some sort of charity fight.
Like celebrity boxing?
Yeah, like have Butterbean first start things off, fighting Ezzy.
Is Butterbean still alive?
Whatever. Someone like Butterbean then.
Okay. I'm not sure. You might want to check on in on that one.
Really?
Larry Brooks chimed in, and I love Brooksy.
Well, he doesn't hold back.
Yeah. And here's his tweet. You know, he quote tweeted the link to the podcast, and he says, "The Pat Quinn Maple Leafs of the early 2000s played disgraceful thuggish hockey that was enabled by the NHL home office next door." That alluding to the fact, of course, that the NHL head office in Canada is located inside the Maple Leafs arena in the attached office building. So Larry Brooks chiming in, sort of, you know, calling out Ty Domi, saying that him and Pat Quinn enabled his quote was disgraceful thuggish hockey. So, you know, everybody's getting their 2 cents in, are getting a little skittish.
It's a bad take. I'm sorry. Again, like,
Ty Domi's take is a bad take.
I like Ty Domi. Yeah, no, Larry Brooks is fine there. I'm just saying, like, that's a bad take. That's not a guy that you want to call a phony.
Just for our listeners' edification, Eric Esch, a.k.a. Butterbean, is still very much alive.
Oh, good.
And living in Atlanta, Georgia, Drew. Oh,
thankfully.
So my reference was completely fine.
And my apologies for killing off Butterbean too soon.
You leave Butterbean alone.
What's that guy eating during self-isolation?
Butterbeans. When we come back...
A lot of steak.
When we come back, Ezzy's got a list of Ezzy awards to hand out. First time in how many years?
A couple.
Thank you.
What about when Ezzy used to wear the fake tuxedo shirt?
Right. Yeah, my tuxedo t-shirt.
Yeah. He classed it up.
He did.
It actually was. I got to say, the early years of the Ezzy's.
Back when Ezzy was funnier, like, you know, when they started, you know, 5 to 7. How many years ago did they start?
Oh, no, it was like 10.
No, not 10.
It was like at least eight years ago.
5 or 6 years ago. I don't remember.
How long have you been married for now?
I have 2 kids under the age of 2. I don't even remember what I did yesterday.
No. The Ezzy's were at least minimum 6 years ago.
I think so.
I think they started. I know exactly when they started. They started during the lockout. So that was 2012. So it's 8 years ago.
Yeah, well, see? There you go. So that was Told 8 years ago. Ago. It was a long time ago. Yeah. Well, the Ezzy's are back. We bring them to you live on air next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. God help us on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number 3, Saturday morning. First time we've ever done this on air. It was a staple of Twitter. Usually Christmas Eve? Was that it? Or the 23rd of December?
Yeah, we usually did it in late December.
Yeah, right around there where people had nothing better to do. You know, they were at home.
There was no hockey.
They were probably sick of their families at this point in time, so they could just stare at their phone for hours on end. Inevitably, it would be trending in Winnipeg. It was trending in Canada, if I'm not mistaken, on more than one occasion, which...
Probably the first time before people got completely sick of it.
The number of people who take this seriously, though... To this day,
I don't know how seriously.
Well, the Ezzy Awards haven't been around for a couple of years, and people still have it as their Twitter.
That's
bio,
what I'm saying. So. They put it in their Twitter
bio. I'm damn proud of that, Drew.
That they say like Twitter, you know, Ezzy Award winner 2017, and I'm thinking to myself, it's not like there's a voting.
Drew, you didn't understand. You weren't part of the process like Ezzy and I were, because yeah. I used to drive with Ezzy to do it. And
we took it seriously.
We took it pretty seriously. Yeah. It was fun, and you know, there's a very rigorous process for candidates, and they would receive an award from Ezzy. It was very prestigious, actually.
Well, the best is in the first couple of years, people actually thought there was a physical award. Like, no, the physical award is you screenshotting your Ezzy award.
It's not like on YouTube when you have like 100,000 followers and you get like a little plaque from YouTube. Ezzy doesn't send anything.
No, the budget for the Ezzy's is very limited. Very minimal.
No, actually, he blew it buying that tuxedo shirt.
Okay, Ezzy Award number one. How many do we have in today's...
I was putting them together last night, and I think I've got like 13 or 14, because obviously we're limited by time here. I wanted to do more, but we've got 13 or 14.
Depending on how long this shutdown lasts, it could be a week two of the Ezzy's next week.
I would have
week.
No problem making this a weekly segment. Okay, let's go here. The first Ezzy Award for creepiest changing of his Twitter profile pic during the COVID-19 pandemic goes to, if anybody's seen his Twitter profile pic, they won't be surprised, Drew Mandel.
Thank you.
For his creepy... mustache in a bathroom profile pic that is still creeping me out. Just change it, man. Like, well, it's terrible.
The good news about it, though, I will say, is that we now have a screenshot of Drew's terrible picture for all time. So even if Drew changes it.
Like, seriously, Drew, you gotta change that.
I think it's a great profile picture.
I love
picture.
It. Thank I you, Sean. I think it's great.
Thank you. Sean Assort chiming in there. I think it's great. For again, if you missed the opening of the show, I've had a full beard for, 5-6 years.
Yeah.
I decided to shave my beard, and I just kept the mustache for about an hour.
That's creepy.
And I took a photo, and it's now my profile photo on Twitter. So
just change it. Just change it to anything. Change it to Brixton, your kids, anything.
Okay. I don't usually put my kids on there, but maybe I'll put my dog on there.
Okay. Let's move on. We only have, 15 minutes here.
You really got as much time as you need. If this goes into next week, it's fine.
Okay. The second Ezzy Award.
Yeah.
For best solo performance... in the inaugural quarantine grocery draft on the afternoon ride on TSN 1290. If you weren't listening live, the podcast is available. It was on Thursday.
TSN1290.ca.
They did the first ever quarantine grocery draft. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people were giving him a hard time here. Michael Remus, former member of Illegal Curve, at M. Remus on Twitter, he gets the Ezzy Award for best drafting.
Best drafting.
I think his Rice first-round pick was very underrated. And I think when you talk about his toilet paper pick in the 5th round, that's an absolute steal. You look at his other picks, soap, broccoli, oranges, popcorn, ground turkey, all solid picks. Michael Remus wins for best drafting in the first ever quarantine grocery draft.
I disagree. I think that the most random draft in the grocery draft had to go to Ken Weeb, who started off very top shelf.
Very bourgeois.
Very bourgeois. You know, filet mignon, lobster, I think some fancy potatoes. And then it really took a hard right turn
with chocolate sauce and ham, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, no, that's usually Kenny's dessert.
Well, I think maybe one of the reasons we don't like it is he took bacon and ham, and we are the Hebrew Hockey Hour, so I think we have some issues with the bacon and the ham together, right?
Oh. Not that you two have ever had that issue.
I'm not a big ham guy myself. I'm a bacon guy, but not ham.
Okay, so Michael Remus gets the second Ezzy Award. Let's continue on here. We have a couple of TSN 1290 radio Ezzies to give out. We're going to give out the MOP of TSN 1290.
MOP standing for?
Most Outstanding Producer.
Oh, wow.
Or player, whatever.
Okay.
Anybody that works here knows how tireless Chris Curry is. So we're going to give Chris Curry the Ezzy Award for Most Outstanding Producer at TSN 1290. The guy works on the afternoon ride. I mean, the fact that he has to work with KO alone, he should get an Ezzy Award. He does the Jets broadcast, so Chris Curry is going to get MOP of TSN 1290 here.
So for comment, I would like to go to our own producer, Sean Asor, to see how Sean feels about being overlooked for the Most Outstanding Producer Award.
I'm fine with it.
Okay.
I think Shawnee would agree. Shawnee's obviously a great producer, too.
I'm fine with that.
Chris Curry, I mean, we know the long hours he's been working. Okay, let's continue on here, Drew. The Ezzy Award for Sexiest Man on TSN 1290. This was a very close one, by the way. The selection committee had a big debate about this. And when I say selection committee, I mean me.
So you debated with yourself yes. is basically what it boiled down to.
It came down to three guys on the big show.
So all three of them were in the running for sexiest?
Yeah. And I have to give it to Jim Toth.
Is it the hair?
Brandon and Westy, they're good-looking guys, but just that flow, man.
So the flow is what put it over the top.
Yeah, the Ezzy Award for Sexiest Man, TSN 1290, Jim Toth. Congratulations, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
Your what award will come in the mail in about 3 weeks.
What an honor.
Okay, let's keep going here.
Yes, please.
The Ezzy Award for Best COVID-19 Pandemic Tweeting by a Hockey Beat reporter goes to Haley Salvian of The Athletic Ottawa. We've had her on the show many times before. I took one. She's hilarious. She's a great reporter, too, but I wanted to share this tweet that she tweeted out a couple days ago. Dad called me with quote-unquote good news. He found jalapeno Cheez-Its at the grocery store. Thought that was funny, because, you know, he's trying to find some levity in a very difficult time.
Was the runner-up Scott Billick? Scotty Billick's been doing some
serious... Don't worry. Scotty's going to get his later.
Okay. I was a little worried. Yeah.
Maybe Scotty gets a Lifetime Achievement Award or something.
But technically, he's a news reporter at this point.
Yeah, he's flipped from the sports. Yeah, somebody actually told him to... Somebody tweeted at him and said, stick to sports. And he responded with, well, I'm actually on the news beat right now.
What sports? Well, there's no sports.
That's the point. That somebody would actually say stick to sports, not being ironic in saying that at this point in time.
All right, the next Ezzy Award for Best COVID-19 Coronavirus Related Video Clip. I'm sure you guys have seen this. Goes to 12-year-old Elias Scharf of Craven, Saskatchewan.
He's the Disney. Is he the Disneyland kid?
He's the Disney kid who said, "We come from Canada, and it took a long trip to get here." And then he takes that sip from the Starbucks cup with his poncho on, and so that's the best video clip so far.
So yes, that he deserves that one. That was a good clip.
He does have
that
a name.
One.
His name is Elias Scharf.
Okay, you've really done the research too.
Oh, I've done research here.
Hey, the Ezzy's are not an amateur sounding radio.
It's not amateur.
No. They're not a fly-by-night operation.
The next Ezzy Award, it's our personal favorite here of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Funniest COVID-19 tweeting from the North End of Winnipeg. Obviously goes to North End Rick.
Yes.
So shout out to North End Rick. He's hilarious on Twitter.
Has there ever been a year where you handed out an Ezzy that North End Rick hasn't won an Ezzy?
No, he's a seven-time winner.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's like into the Ezzy's Hall of Fame.
Oh, that's next week's show.
Yeah. I've got a few other ones coming up here. Ezzy Award for Unsung Hero, a guy that does some great work in the community. Big Poppy Peg City on Twitter, Roddy Batista. He raises a lot of money and awareness for the Bruce Oak Recovery Center.
Yeah.
And Project 11, of course, named after Rick Rippon. Just a great guy fighting for people suffering from addiction, mental health issues. So shout out to Roddy. He gets an Ezzy Award, Unsung Hero.
Yes, that's a good one. I have no joke to add on that one. That's just a good, honest award.
Yeah, you got to give out some serious ones.
Yes, otherwise the whole thing would just be a joke.
Yeah, obviously. Next one we're going to give out to, obviously, a guy that we're very familiar with, big fan of the show, part of the IC Whack Pack, Mikey McMikeface, a.k.a. Mike Young. He gets the Ezzy Award for Best Twitter Display Name Change during the COVID-19 pandemic. If you remember, he was Mikey McMikeface, and he changed his name to Mikey McDon't Touch Your Face.
Clever.
All right, didn't know that one. That's a good one.
And if you remember, he was Evander's Kane.
Yes, I remember that.
So he was,
in fact, not only, in fact,
well known to
a
us.
Little Ezzy history, yeah. Ezzy's history, he brought Evander's Kane
yes.
to the Ezzy's.
Yes. Yes, he actually brought the yeah. cane itself. Yeah. Didn't he get in studio once here also?
Scepter,
no, I think
so.
He gave it to us after.
Oh.
He gave it to us and we brought it in studio.
Where is that?
It's in the Hall of Fame.
It's in the Illegal Curve Hall of Fame?
No, the NHL Hall of Fame. They called me and they said, can we have Evander's Kane? I said, sure. Who am I to hold it back? It's a piece of memorabilia.
Next Ezzy Award is going to go
actually,
to...
I can't believe this is being broadcast right now.
It's a good friend of mine. We're going to give him the Ezzy Award for person who was the most ready to work from home long before self-isolation was a thing. That's going to go to my really good friend, Brian Borzakowski. On Twitter at B Borzico.
Okay.
Because he's been working at home for 15 years. He's a freelance writer.
That's a good way to be
and
ready.
He had an article about it, and you can read that article. I'll maybe tweet that out, but this guy was well ahead of everybody else. So he's
ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
The ahead
flattened
of the
curve, hopefully.
The flattened curve, right.
The next Ezzy Award for the best post game interview during the NHL season stoppage. If you haven't seen this, go to my Twitter account, at ICEZEG, and check this out. I don't know if you guys saw this.
I think I blocked you. In fact, I know I blocked you.
Our good friend Amanda Stein interviewed Corey Schneider.
Oh, yesterday. Yeah, yeah.
After Schneider stopped 98 of 102 shots against the Flames in an NHL 20 video game simulation. It's absolutely hilarious. And the funniest part of it is Corey Schneider's got one of his kids crawling on him during the whole interview. It's hilarious. I mean, in this time when we don't have any hockey or sports to talk about.
That was well done by the
Devils. So go check that out. It's very funny.
How did they give up 102 shots?
It's a video game.
The Flames were really good that game.
Yeah.
And it's New Jersey.
Johnny Gaudreau had 20 shots.
Although someone had fun. Someone on Twitter did have a funny reply to the comment thread. They were like, because, you know, as you just said, one of his kids was on Schneider's shoulder. Yeah. And they said, how did Jack Hughes get on your shoulder?
That's clever.
Okay, we've got a few left here, thank God.
Video games are supposed to be more realistic now.
I think they are.
Well, 102 shots isn't very realistic.
Well, we don't know the circumstances. Okay. Maybe there's more to it.
The next
unlike the segment.
The next Ezzy Award. And obviously, everybody has more time at home now.
Yes.
So, and we have kids, Drew.
Yes.
And when we talk about, you know, what to do with our kids, you're always looking for things to do. And this
maybe what we can get them to do is we can get our kids to color some Ezzy Awards and send them out to the winners.
Well, it's funny you mentioned coloring. I want to give a shout out. And this Ezzy Award goes to, on Twitter, at Essence's Blocker. Obviously, one of the greatest Jets 1.0 goalies.
Uh-huh.
He's hilarious on Twitter. He gets the Ezzy Award for coming up with the most creative idea for your kids to do. What he's done is he's created blank goalie mask templates. And so you print them off, and then your kids can draw whatever goalie mask they want.
You know what I'm discovering is the hardest part about working from home? I don't have a printer. You know, I never print.
Go to the office, steal one of the printers, and go back to your house.
Steal one of the printers. They're pretty big.
I'm sure someone in your office has a personal computer.
Industrial size printer, photocopier, collator.
Just get a dolly. It's fine.
Yeah. Or just come to my house. I have a printer.
Really? You have a printer?
Yep.
No, that's bad social isolation.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, don't come to my house.
You have a printer?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Dave's printing to the left, to the right.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
He's got documents flying out of that thing.
He's got a scanner on there. Come on. I also tweeted a picture of a Game Boy the other day. So, I mean, we've got quite a bit of
time on our hands.
Collectibles. Yeah.
Okay, we've got
hang on, that was a real picture from your house?
Yeah.
That Game Boy?
That was my Game Boy.
I thought that was just some stock photo you got off the internet.
No, that's my Game Boy.
Wow. Does it still work?
I haven't played it. I haven't put batteries in it. I'm sure it still works. Why wouldn't it work?
Oh.
Yeah. Thing was well built.
Time is a wasting. Get on that. You can bring in the Game Boy next week.
Listen to the host of Illegal Curve play Game Boy while the rest of us listen in.
Okay, can I continue here?
You can continue.
What?
Yeah, I got it.
The next Ezzy Award for best COVID-19 social distancing condo chat goes to Melissa Martin of the Winnipeg Free Press, a.k.a. at Double M Martin on Twitter. Great writer. She also gets an Ezzy Award for fantastic curling coverage.
Yes.
She does a great job covering curling. I don't know if you saw her social distancing condo chat, but it was really good. It was really nice. Good content.
Good way to stay in touch with
people.
I mean,
you need content right now.
You do.
There's no sports to write about.
Or listen to, as the segment is clearly demonstrating.
The next Ezzy Award goes to the best COVID-19 reporting while listening to Darude Sandstorm every hour. That's going to go to our good friend Scotty Billick.
Yes, no, there's no doubt. He does love his Sandstorm.
I just visualize Scott Billick doing all of his writing in his house, just listening to Darude the whole time.
Just on the loop?
Yeah.
Well, I will say, when Scott Billick had a chance to join me in Winnipeg to go see Darude live and listen to Sandstorm, he chose not to race. I myself went by my and actually some of Scott's friends were happened to be there, who I recognized from Jets games. And I waited till 2 in the morning before they started playing Sandstorm. And I recorded it.
When did this happen?
It was a post. I was with the boys. It was a Wednesday night.
My and, like Darude has other songs? Like, what other songs does he have?
Well, he's... Darude's been around for, like, 30 years. The guy's been making music. King of techno.
Can you get him on the show next week?
It's pretty big, but, I mean, maybe. But if we do, then we have to have Scott on the show, because we can't do... You know, it'd be like... that'd be such a perfect unison. Like, Scott, meet your hero.
Is this the last Ezzy?
I've got two more to go here.
Okay.
Okay, so the second last Ezzy, the penultimate Ezzy, as it were, Drew,
Yes,
is going to go to IC Guest of the Year. This was a tough one because we have a lot of good guests on the show.
We do.
We just had Stephen Wino on the show. He's a regular guest. I got to give it to our boy, Mike McIntyre.
Yeah.
He gets IC Guest of the Year. He comes on, you know, once a month, once every couple months. Just does an awesome job covering the Jets in the world of hockey. So I'm going to give IC, Illegal Curve Guest of the Year, to our boy Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press.
What an honor.
And by the way, the Winnipeg Free Press and Winnipeg Sun are not paying me for these awards, just so everybody's clear.
Nobody's paying you for these awards.
And then, obviously, the last Ezzy.
Is this the Lifetime Achievement Award?
No, it's not the Lifetime Achievement Award.
You have to think about that. That'll be next week.
Yeah, we'll do that next week, maybe, if we're on air. We'll probably be off air.
I don't think we're going to make it to the next segment, let alone next week.
The last Ezzy is going to go to my wife, Naomi Ginsberg. Anybody who can be in self-isolation with me.
That's true. I agree, 100%.
Not only deserves an Ezzy.
She deserves a hazard pay.
She deserves a Humanitarian of the Year Award. Uh-huh. She deserves everything.
She deserves $1 billion.
Yeah, that's true, actually. So, there's
Naomi, I love you. You get the last
there's
one.
There's no amount of money that would make... Well, I mean, I've spent some time with Big Daddy here. You know, it's we've had some social isolation when we go to the drafts.
Yeah.
But...
No,
that's a lot.
To have to live with
usually
him?
I can get a little break from Ez.
Yeah, that's usually August for you. But there you go. So that was a segment that just happened.
That was a thing.
That was a throwback.
That was
when was the last Ezzy's, do we think?
I think it was 2017.
2017.
Okay. Wow. Well, first time in 3 years. I hope. Right. Congratulations to all the winners.
Yeah, you will not be receiving your prizes in the mail.
There will be nothing coming to you whatsoever. But people are already on Twitter congratulating one another.
Oh, okay.
Which is something that, again...
In a genuine fashion or a mocking fashion?
No, a genuine fashion that they are proud to have won Ezzy's
Are people poking each other like they did back in the day on Facebook?
Who? No, nobody poked more than this guy. Ezzy
loved the poke.
Yeah. Now what he does, he just texts you incessantly.
Yeah.
But prior to that, Ezzy loved the poke. You just be like minding your own business.
Oh, yeah.
Going about it, doing some work. All of a sudden you get a little notification. Poke. And be like Ezzy.
When we come back, we talk about the impact of the shutdown
the
on
the impact of the Ezzy Award.
Escrow payments throughout the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That was the Ezzy's live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The NHL head office very busy. The Players Association equally busy. Players, you know, flooding with calls wondering about the financial future of the National Hockey League. How bleak might it look, especially if the season is wiped out. And as we've reported, I mean, those two sides will come together in some capacity, be it with a salary cap or escrow. But there is a growing concern that the losses could mount upwards of $1 billion, certainly around $500 million. But at this point, it's an educated guess.
It's going to cost some money. It's going to cost a lot of money. Now, most people don't have a ton of sympathy for millionaires and billionaires losing a lot of money. I got to tell you, when people are struggling to figure out how they're going to make their rent payments, their mortgage payments, put food on their table for their kids. But
thankfully right now, with that being mitigated.
Yeah, with that caveat out there, of course, the NHL and the NHLPA are certainly in unprecedented times. According to Larry Brooks of the New York Post, Brooksy, the worst case scenario could see escrow rising an additional 21% from its current 14%, meaning players would only take home 35%
pardon me, would give up 35% of the value of the contracts that they expected to receive this season. It goes to show you just how much of the NHL's lifeblood is in the playoffs. How the playoffs are where the NHL makes the vast majority of their money.
Well, it's still a gate-driven league.
It's still a gate-driven league. You know, it's not like the NFL and the NBA and Major League Baseball where television is the ultimate driver in terms of revenue. Mm-hmm. The NHL is a gate-driven league, and so when you don't have that gate revenue, which you may or may not have, it's a financial calamity for these players that have millions of dollars of contracts. I mean, again, if I have a $10 million contract and I only get 65% of that money, I'm still doing okay. Still doing pretty well.
6.5 million.
I should still be able to make ends meet.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, can you imagine $3.5 million coming off your paycheck?
You're also making 65% of that money before taxes.
Right. So, I mean, you're right. So that's the number drops down even more. And again, that's with the caveat that you know none of these guys are going to go hungry. And they're not a chief concern. But it does go to show, it pulls back the curtain a little bit on how the NHL's finances are really generated.
Right.
In that it's in the playoffs when they don't pay the players and they collect, you know, what do they say? Usually it's $2 or $3 million per
game,
the per home game, per home playoff game. That is the real driving force behind the NHL generating revenue.
Which is, of course, why you're seeing these, you know, why nobody wants to give up games.
Right. The desperate.
Why, while fans who are weary of, you know, an 82-game season plus, you know, a playoffs that they feel stretches on too long, not necessarily in terms of the number of games that are played, but just how long it goes, you know, that to me is why a lot of fans won't have sympathy because they're saying, cut it right now because, you know, again, but you see all these proposals where they're saying, well, we need to get this game in. You know, players are saying, let's do this. And the interesting thing is, And I thought was key, was that Bill Daly, you know, deputy commissioner of the NHL, said, we don't want to do anything that'll affect the integrity of the 82 games for next season, right? So here's a crazy notion. If you're thinking about doing this, why not change next season to a 72-game season or a 75-game season to at least allow – so because, again, at the end of the day, you have to think about the health and well-being of your players.
Well, you know? they prefer the health and well-being of their pocketbooks more than their players.
It's done for.
That's it for the Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live here on TSN Radio 1290. Big thank you to all of our guests. We were joined by Jen Botterill, Stephen Wino. We were joined by Nick Wolf. He's a Boston Bruins signee. And Mike McIntyre. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on TSN1290.ca. It's on our website, illegalcurve.com. It's wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us. Let us know what you think of the program. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support the Legal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Sean Assor doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.